Hey, welcome back to Golden State of Mind. I'm Daniel. Today, I've got Bran and W-Dubs, two Hall of Famers in the blog world, and of course, the Golden State of Mind community. Bran, how are you doing, good sir?
I'm good, man. Thank you for having me on again. It's been too long.
The Master has returned, and of course, W-Dubs, how are you doing, Captain?
I'm good. Happy to take a break from writing previews about how we're probably going to lose.
You turn into an art form.
You know, I'm a veteran of those now, because you know and it's funny that Bram's on now, because the way that I actually got started writing for Golden State of Mind is when Nate took over and he bought Bram on. Bram would write these really hilarious, like super brilliant, sort of like free form society of basketball sort of critiques. And then they're plugging him in to write these like dry ass like recaps and previews. And I was like, let me free you up to write about things that are a little more engaging for you. So it's funny now that I've sort of settled into this like preview machine.
And I've settled into not writing at all.
No, and you vanished.
Sorry, Nate. I'm really sorry, Nate.
Well, I think that's kind of the theme of this Warrior season in terms of the mundane day-to-day, game-to-game kind of aspects of it, because the heavy hitters, for the most part, are out. I think it's fascinating, after five straight trips in the NBA Finals and, you know, seven straight playoff trips, that we're kind of temporarily, hopefully, going back to the days of it's a great time out with the Thunder mascot and, you know, all those really rough games where, you know, we were tuning in, not even necessarily to see if we can get a win, but just to see that we could play some decent basketball. W-Dubs, with all the previews you've been writing, what is your expectations before each game, going into each one?
Hella low. You know, these games, man, it's like our teams are just so outgunned, you know? So it sort of takes a perfect storm of circumstances. You know, I do think that they're going to start turning the corner, but I'm not sure what the ceiling is without our shooters.
Right.
You know, D'Angelo Russell's pretty nice, but the problem has been, you know, not to oversimplify, but the problem has been everything. Our offense is really bad. Our defense is really bad. And we don't have enough healthy players. We've been playing with eight players, like the league mandatory minimum number of available players, for like 2 weeks straight. So that's turning around, though. The defense is getting a little bit better. It's still abysmally bad, but it's not the very, very worst in the league. You know, it's a very thin margin, but it's a baby step. And the roster's coming back, man. We had, what, like 11 players tonight?
Yeah, we did.
Which is almost kind of funny. Quad.
You're like talking about the team as if you're a doctor giving a prognosis to an anxious parent about their kid who swallowed some super glue, and you're like, well, you know, he's blind in one eye now, but he can still move around a little bit. Like, it's amazing how we went from super team to depression. But it's funny because I remember it was in the finals last year, Bram came on the pod, the Dr. Tom and Gilbert at King Pod, and he said, wow, I kind of missed the days when there was more struggle to the team because winning all the time is so boring. Now, Bram, with the season we're having now, are you not entertained?
I don't know, man. I think that the state of the Warriors has shifted so drastically, so quickly, that it's something that I think even me jokingly in the finals saying, oh, I miss those Halcon days of the struggle and, you know, like the sold out crowds and Oracle and, you know, I mean, not that it wasn't sold out obviously when they were winning too, but I don't think I've ever seen a team so decimated by both departure of key players and then also injury. And to go from, you know, obviously a five-time straight finals championship caliber team to, I don't even think it's potentially like just actually the worst team in the NBA. I don't think I can't remember that ever happening in my lifetime. And I wouldn't say that I appreciate it more. I definitely, you know, wish that the team was performing up to the caliber of, like, you know, what the coaching staff can bring to the table, and, you know, obviously what Steve Kerr is able to coach, and, you know, he's doing the best that he can with, you know, obviously a very limited offering of players who are available right now, and with Steph Hurt and Clay out for the season and Draymond in and out of the lineup, and, you know, everyone just struggling. But I think the writing was on the wall from the get-go, and that, like, you know, this team was, with especially with Clay out on the perimeter, they were going to be the worst defensive team in the league. And I think that, I don't know, it's hard to, you know, those teams with Monte Ellis, and then the magic that was, we believe, you know, there was a certain sort of sense of that we had earned it just by having suffered through so much. And I guess you could say that now we've earned being this horrible because we have experienced such highs. But again, like, I guess the closest thing would be like when all the, you know, when LeBron and eventually Wade and Bosch and all those guys left Miami, and they were really bad for a couple of years. And I think that, like, that's sort of what you're saying. And, you know, or I guess also when David Robinson got hurt and the Spurs ended up, you know, tanking, getting the number one pick with Duncan, you know, I mean, and so that's the best case scenario. But I don't know if there's that, like, transcendent player in this draft that would make it worth it to totally tank. And also the Warriors are definitely not trying to tank yet, and they're still the worst team in the NBA. So I don't know. I mean, that's a convoluted way to answer your question, but it's definitely also not, you know, it's not something that I'm enjoying watching or partaking in, because it's basically like watching a G League team playing against world-class talent. And
right,
like, why would it, you know, it you don't have that, like spunky upstart fun weird, I mean, you do to a certain extent, but it's just not, I don't know, it's so much easier to talk yourself into failure when you've experienced it for 30 years, and then if you've experienced success, then to be like, oh, well, failure was fun, and so, you know, I'm the fucking idiot that, like, said that in the first place, but, you know, here we are.
Well, you know, the other thing too is that a lot of the, you know, during those Monte days, there was a sort of homegrown sense, you know, the We Believe team was a lot of traded people. But it was still like a sort of project that we had been working on. With this team, there's a lot of temporary pieces. And I think that maybe that slows people down from, like, emotionally investing, because outside of guys like Pascal and Amari Spellman, you know, there's just not a lot of pieces that are necessarily like foundational.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's something that we're going to really see what happens with Bob Meyer and everything, is that, like, you know that this isn't the team, you know? So it's just like a purely transitional year, which even in the We Believe and the build-up to that, like, it was still like, oh, Jason Richardson, like, I love this dude. Like, him winning the dunk championship was huge, you know? And it's like, oh, he's going to be a part of whatever happens in the future. And then, like, as that actually came to fruition, it came true and then was suddenly not true, obviously. Right. But, like, there was that sense of, like, oh, we're working towards something. And, like, you know, you're giving your fans some hope. We're like, this season for the Warriors is, like, I guess they're working towards the number one pick, ideally, which is cool. But, like, how many of these people are going to be on the team next year? And when you get Steph back and you get Clay back and Draymond is healthy again, ideally, and then whatever the draft pick is, and, you know, you flip that for – I saw some headline that was, like – it was one of those, like, crazy clickbait headlines, but of course I clicked on it because I was like, ooh, that would be fun. But it was like, you know, Warriors with number one pick will select LaMelo Ball and flip him for Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I was like, oh, yeah, hell yeah, let's do that. It's just like, oh, man, whoever wrote that article is great. You know, but that's, I mean, I guess there's a certain joy that you can find in, like, coming up with just, like, crazy harebrained schemes that, you know, you can, like, superimpose your own fandom onto, you know, the potential future reality of whatever the team is going to do. But, I mean, the reality is, like, it's hard for me to start caring about a lot of these players because I just think they're going to be on the team for that long. outside of like the general, like, oh, I care about every player that's in the NBA, and like I'm curious where they came from and where they're going, and like, oh, interesting, he was on that team and he got called out from here and whatever. But it's not, I don't know, I haven't emotionally connected to any of the players in the same way that I did to, you know, for example, Monte or Jason Richardson or any of those players who were like a part of the team when they sucked the last time.
Well, I mean, they've only been here for like 2 months, you know. I mean, maybe that has something to do with it. They're really like all fresh faces for the most part. I think that's, as you kind of stated when we were off the air, you were kind of stating that you look at the TV sometimes, you're like, who's that guy? Like, what's going on? And
yeah, and like I follow basketball, like, and I like, and again, like that's an indictment on me and the fact that I'm not as plugged in as I was previously. But like, I literally sometimes I'm like, Wikipedia, and I'm like, this is on the team that I follow, and I'm still, and especially at the beginning of the year, obviously, like in the very beginning, it's I don't know, and that obviously is a unique experience that I have not, that I don't think any of us have really had to think about or deal with for the last, you know, 5 years. It was like, oh, here's the starting lineup, and it's the potentially like arguably the best starting lineup of all time. And then less than, you know, what, 3 or 4 months later, it's like a G League team. And it's, and that is unique, that I think that like severity of a flip has, again, like has not quite, I've never seen it before, like I said before.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah. I dig that for sure. I mean, literally, what, 4 or 5 months ago, we were in the finals, like maybe about to win a championship, if not for all the injuries. Like, so yeah, totally. I also think it's fascinating the level of celebration we're seeing some other teams when they beat us, notably the Lakers. I think when they beat us in preseason, their Twitter was like, consider this a warning, NBA, or something like that. And of course, the Clippers, you know, being excited about it.
I think I was actually at that game, the one that you're talking about with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. That was like I randomly was in the Bay Area, like we're talking about off air, but I was in the Bay Area and went to that preseason game, and they did tweet that, but it also was a warning because they looked really good, and that has like, that has borne out. I mean, they do still look really good. And that was the first time that we really saw AD and LeBron like really coordinating their efforts and really going in. And I mean, again, whoever's running the Lakers PR, like that's not a shot, because that, I mean, they weren't wrong. Like I don't think it was so much like against the, oh, we beat the Warriors in the preseason, even though again, like Steph was in that game, et cetera, et cetera. But I think they weren't wrong in saying that, you know, as good as we thought AD and LeBron were going to be together, they've maybe been even better, you know?
I mean, I guess I don't get too excited over the regular season because we've had too many championships. So maybe you're right. If you care about the regular season, maybe that's the way to go. For me personally, being a championship-minded person, it's in a preseason warning seems a bit presumptuous. But that's just me, you know? That's
my favorite. I mean, you're not – man, don't make me – oh, man, you're going to make me defend the Lakers, which I really hate because I – I mean, I can't state enough how much I hate the Lakers, but if you're going to go on like the count the rings thing, that's like what every Lakers fan does.
Which is why I'm surprised that they would be excited about a preseason win. That's why I'm shocked, personally.
Because they've been so bad for so long, you know?
Now we're making excuses about what we're doing.
There was somebody in the comments after one of the articles where it was like, you know, we were all piling on like, woohoo, you beat Kai Bowman's Warriors. Great job. And somebody from the other team like popped in and was like, hey, I remember Steph like shimmy shouldering all over, you know, the like 12 win Washington Wizards. And it's like, okay, that's fair. So I personally,
I think in the NBA, yeah, in the NBA, a win over any team is a win. And it's something to be celebrated because these are the best athletes in the world. And you know, unfortunately, the Warriors have been running out of team that is like obviously inferior to every other team in the league.
Pretty much.
You know, so far this season.
There's definitely a couple rosters where I like look at it and I'm like, well, we got a chance tonight.
Like Portland?
yeah, like, you know, I was thinking about the Bulls.
Listen, if you want to go in on Melo, like I am ready.
All Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
But let's talk about how I think in this is a strange season. I'll say that much. In that, like, the Warriors went from the best team in the league to the worst team in the league in one fell swoop. And KD's out. Kyrie is off doing weird ass Kyrie stuff. You know, the Lakers are suddenly good. The Clippers are obviously suddenly good. And I think that we just have a lot of elements in the league. I mean, it's exciting in the sense of, I think the last 5 years, you know, if you were a Warriors hater, you could easily point to it and be like, well, I kind of know the outcome. You know, the Warriors and probably the Cavaliers are going to be in the finals, and that's just what it is.
It's not what the Rockets thought, but please go on.
Well.
Definitely wasn't what they were thinking in Houston, but please go on.
Oh, man, the Rockets. All right, slight detour. Man, the Rockets. You guys, obviously, I'm sure it's been covered substantially, but you saw that they actually thought that the NBA might award them that game?
They didn't think, Bram. They presumed that it was so clear that they were going to that they weren't prepared to actually even file a grievance yet. They're just going to wait for the league to step in and tell them that
they thought the league would just step in of their own accord and just give them the game.
Because
in which Harden and Westbrook combined to shoot like something like 60 shots or something altogether. And they also lost a 20-point lead over the last quarter or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah. Had the worst shooting night in NBA history. I think it was 11 for 38, 4 for 20 from beyond the arc. I think that is literally the worst shooting night in NBA history.
But he still scored his points. I would. Do we do any political stuff on here or no? He's purely basketball.
Wait, political stuff and James Harden? Where is this going? I'm very.
I think we should do it, Bram.
The Rockets are more delusional than the GOP. Currently.
Oh, wow! We're going there with it. Okay. I hear what you're saying.
I could buy that though because they don't just ignore facts and like invent their own reality. They've got like spreadsheets and stuff. It's like the facts
and they make
revealing stuff.
Signs and they put it up in hearings. They place the signs behind their operatives and they say, "Oh no, James Harden actually should have been the MVP. The Giannis Antetokounmpo MVP was fake news. Oh no, we actually should have won this game. Let us go back to 7:20 left in the fourth quarter in this dunk that, yes, you missed. Okay, cool. There's one thing that you can point to that was actually messed up by the refs. Cool, congratulations. That doesn't mean that we're going to award you the game. Like, there's something off. There's really something wrong with the Rockets. And I said this in our Slack, but like, I just don't understand how that team thinks that they're operating in this. And maybe it's because they have this crazy inflated sort of impression of themselves and like how smart they are, but they're operating in a way which sort of like constantly negates the efforts of the other teams in the league and also constantly elevates their own efforts to be like, oh, well, this is obviously the way that things should be done. And because of that, then they're like, oh, well, because you missed this one call, like you should obviously award us the game. Like that's just not going to happen. And I don't understand how they have the gall and the intestinal fortitude to even think that that would be acceptable or a possibility.
There's someone high up. I would assume it's Maury, but someone in a very power position that is super delusional about, you know, the line between data and assumptions used in a model. And I think that what their problem is that they put all these assumptions in and treat the model output like it's data. You know, in other words,
right.
Remember they had the whole thing about, oh, we lost this many potential points in the against yeah. the Warriors in the playoffs. You know, like, so I do in my day life, I do like a data analysis job, like data auditing for emissions and power. And one of the things that we always recommend to clients that we consult for is to have someone, an outsider of the process, come in and do a sense check. Do all of your assumptions make sense? Or all the sources of the math that you're applying, the ones that you're supposed to be using? And I don't think the Rockets have that at all. I think they just have some guy who's like, hey, check out this really neat thing. And then they have some 20-year-old, like, yes kid, who's like, you know, Mr. Morey, if I change this coefficient to this number, it decreases our inaccuracy spread by 4%. And he's like, run it. And no one's like, hey, guys, this is all made up stuff.
Right. And meanwhile, it's like in the real world, people are just shaking their head and trying to understand how they could have gotten to the table with that demand. You know? Yeah.
Well, and you know what else it is too, though, Bram, is that, you know, they sort of fool's golded themselves into thinking they had figured stuff out. Remember, they have this whole like, no, only layups and three pointers.
Right.
And so that's our model. And we're going to get these versatile wing defender guys to slow the Warriors down. And like, James Harden is really good at scoring points. And those wing defenders were pretty good at stopping the Warriors pass heavy attack. And I think they were like, wow, we figured it out, versus like, it's kind of like the light years thing where it's like, are you really light years ahead or are your players just hella good?
Yeah. And I don't think that like that sense of hubris is unique to the Rockets, because obviously Joe Lacob has shown extreme versions of not understanding the room and not being able to just be a normal human being and interact in a way that like makes normal human beings comfortable. But at the same time,
Warriors owner, hot takes tonight.
First, oh, come on. I mean, he said, oh, come on. I mean, light years, like go back to the light years quote. That's an incredible take.
It's super asinine. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Like if you were me as a Warriors fan and writing about the team at that time and currently as well, was like, whoa, dude. Listen, I know you have access to billions of dollars right now in VC, and you have a hot, you know, like your life is great and you own a team, but just maybe like crowdsource that take, you know, like send that out into the world and don't say that outside of like your pleasure den in your third home, you know, where you like.
What was wrong? I mean, who's the greatest modern team in terms of stringing up wins together? The Golden State Warriors. Who has the greatest five-man lineup of all time? Probably the Hampton's Five, Golden State Warriors. I mean, yeah. Didn't Steph Curry literally change the game of basketball? Like, literally?
Curry, yeah, but that's the thing, though. Curry did. It was not the Warriors' philosophy that did that.
Wow.
It's really? Very, well, it's like the Mark Jackson. Like, oh, you know, before Mark Jackson, the defense sucked. And it's like, dude, we got Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, and Andrew Bogut. Fuck out of here with your philosophy talk. Like, that's what made
it. Wait. I'm sorry. You're telling me that Steve Kerr instituting this offense with this player that literally shattered all records for offensive efficiency is not light years ahead and it was all Curry? Because I'm pretty sure Curry was playing with the Warriors before Steve Kerr and was not shattering those records.
It is light years, but like, dude, like all I'm saying is like, read the room. Like, you might not be wrong. Like, what's that line from The Great Lebowski? Like, you're not wrong, Walter. You're just an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, just keep it to yourself, man. You know, like Daniel, you're making like amazing videos. You're not like calling me at 3 a.m. and like you know, telling me to go watch them or something. You know what I mean?
I like, just feel like maybe we're too broke to understand where Joe Lacob came from. And that's, you know, a possibility. You know, he's a different planet than us, possibly, you know, as far as what he's accomplished. And, you know, maybe us on the couch don't know what his mindset was. And, you know, I don't know the guy personally, but I appreciate him for bringing the dynasty, you know, to life.
I appreciate the heck out of him as well, obviously. Right here, I mean, this
hey, is not- whatever you got to call it. Keep rolling in, Joe Lacob.
Yeah, no, he's doing great. I'm just saying that, like, maybe the billionaire owners who run these teams are not really great at, like, connecting with normal fans. That's my only point.
Normal fans?
And I think that just any or mean, anybody who's not an owner. but again, like, I don't, you know, I'm not trying to disparage Joe Lacob. What's that?
Graham and W Dubs represent the normal fans.
Oh no, we yeah. I mean, do you think that I don't know? I mean, I do not have my finger on the pulse as much as I used to. Like, do you think that, like, if you were a Rockets fan and you're looking at Joe Lacob saying those things, like, would you disparage him as much as we disparage, you know, the Rockets sort of executive brain branch or whatever, like,
it's just
being as crazy there as they are. Not again, I'm not trying to equate them. I mean, I guess I am to a certain extent, but it's like, how did we get from me talking shit about the Rockets to, like, somehow, like, me trying to, like, say that all billionaires who own teams are a little bit off?
I don't know. It definitely seems like a little axe to grind, you know, but I can dig this America free country. Personally, I feel as though it's kind of in the nature of sports fandom and obviously the political arena as well, where you pick your team and then the other team is, you know, dumb or stupid or prideful or evil. And it's kind of like consistent, you know, throughout tribal society. So I can definitely understand why someone from the Rockets might be like, oh, I cannot believe you said that, but Daryl Morey's a genius. Like, of course they would say that. So I kind of think it may be like the relevancy of it is kind of eradicated because it's so natural and so normal. Like, I'm pretty sure the people who were getting crushed by the Warriors probably didn't like Steph shimming, but I like Steph shimming. So is Steph shimming good or bad? Well, I guess it depends where you're looking at it from. So I think,
right. Well, that was how this all started, right? Was talking about the joy that teams are taking by just beating the hell out of Kai Bowman's Warriors.
So much joy.
And it's like, as a fan of basketball, like, I can't get that mad at it. You know, like, sure, you're not beating our best selves, but that's a legitimate victory and it wasn't that close. So, like, go ahead and enjoy it.
And that's the beauty of fandom, because you can feel how you want to feel, and I can feel murderous rage because the dynasty is crumbling before my very eyes. And the very foes that we used to crush game after game now are laughing in our faces with our heroes in cryostasis, injured, you know, in carbonite freeze. Personally, I cannot wait until the Splashers come back. I mean, I'm also heavy into narrative and stuff like that, but I think that's really random. Like, from the different pendulums, the way it swings, I personally am keeping track. Literally, I have a list, and I might be a bit neurotic. I can see that. I have a list of everyone who was talking mess about the Warriors during the downtime, because when Steph and Klay come back, trust me, there will be a special video.
This is why him and Tom get along so well. They've got this sort of, like, sociopathic tendency of just rubbing the haters.
Rubbing the haters maybe is not the way to make
them
mad.
Well, it's probably not the great thing. Rubbing the haters' noses into the smelly pile of our impending victories.
But getting back to, you know, the team we have now, who do you see and say, hey, this guy's going to be a part of the future going forward?
I think whoever we get in a trade for D'Angelo Russell is going to be a part of the team going forward. And that's, like, maybe it.
Ooh. See, I'm taking Eric Pascal. I think the one thing that the Warriors have struggled with, and this is only going to get worse with everybody aging, is our ability to compete with teams from a physicality standpoint. And Bram, I don't know if you've played ball, but you've certainly watched enough of it. And I know that Daniel does for sure. there's times where the other team is just so much physically better. It doesn't matter how good you are at shooting the ball. You can't get the rebounds. You can't get where you want to go. And I think that Pascal has the potential to be the sort of like bruising wing, right. You know, like almost like a Corey Maggette mold, where it's like, I don't even care how good this guy really is. It's like nobody can really stop him without fouling him. And I think that that is going to be a role moving forward that the Warriors are really going to want. And it doesn't hurt that he's super, super cheap.
Super, super cheap.
Yeah, the other one I wouldn't mind keeping would be Burks. I would love to keep Burks to come off the bench on another minimum contract somehow.
Oh, dude, Burks, if we had him in the finals last year, we'd probably win the thing. Like, that dude is a perfect role player for us.
Yeah, all the criticisms on him are, like right now, you're talking about, and this goes for the whole team, you're talking about these guys like they're starters. You know, this entire roster, except for Draymond and D'Angelo Russell, are not NBA starter-level players. So it's going to look way different with them coming in off the bench where Steve Kerr can sort of pick and choose. You know, he can attack matchups or avoid certain matchups with certain guys and, like, work with combos and stuff. My understanding of who's going to be helpful in the future is sort of reliant on them having a reduced role that makes their impact a little easier on the play.
How much do you think that Steve Kerr appreciates this challenge in a purely like in a bubble coaching situation, as opposed to having to deal with KD's bullshit for the last 4 years?
I mean, personally, I think he's kind of refreshed. I think, but maybe that's just me as a fan too, because I feel a little bit refreshed. It's a shitty experience to watch the team struggle so much, but it's a clean slate now, man. There's not this sort of, not dread necessarily, but like a sort of mundane feeling as we go into these meaningless games. Now, games are just as meaningless. You know, now we're playing for the worst seed instead of the best record, but it's still a thing that's like, you could just, by the composition of the team, that we have this sort of inertia that's going to get us there one way or another. And I think that for Kerr, just being able to like try something different and like have new challenges is probably a little bit refreshing.
I mean, I would think that it would be something like if you had, what's the analogy that I can use that's like in any way PC? All right, I'm going to pivot, actually. How deeply is Dr. Tom still sad about the fact that KD actually turned out to
100%.
Not be the player he thought he was going to be and stick around?
1,000%.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's probably the real conundrum about this kind of topic, is because Kevin Durant did so much to help this franchise, as the franchise did so much to help Kevin Durant. I mean, he was the 2-time Finals MVP, and he was a monster on the court. Mm-hmm. Additionally, his charity work in the Bay Area was phenomenal, top-notch. And the players liked him. The players loved him.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, he's so good.
The reason like Draymond was screaming at him was because he loves Kevin Durant and was frustrated with him as a brother would. Like, that's the reason they got a huge fight. Like, Steph flew all the way from China to go talk to him, even though he had made this decision to leave to Brooklyn. Like, Klay Thompson, when he talks about KD, he glows. Like, these guys really enjoyed Kevin Durant, the person.
Well, he's an all-time top 10, 5, 10 player.
I'm saying as a person, though. I'm saying that
they
weren't flocking to him because he can get them championships. I mean, that had a part to it. But they actually cared about him. So what I'm saying is the drama level that came with Kevin Durant, even though it was frustrating, I'm sure they weren't like, oh, thank goodness Kevin's gone. They were probably more like,
I think everybody would jump to have KD back.
You know what I'm saying? So, but I do think that
my question is like, it's not so much that, and I feel like sometimes in the Dr. Tom vs. Bram Chronicles, like, I get painted as like a Katie hater, but I'm more just like curious because I'm actually, I mean, I think some of the, you know, for example, like the podcast he did with Bill Simmons, like, were some of the most interesting in-depth podcasts I've ever heard from an NBA player. And it's rare that you ever hear somebody opening themselves up like that, especially in this day and age. And he really is one of the few athletes who is obviously willing to not only open up to an interviewer in a real way, but then also, you know, for better or for worse, like, engage with fans online. Like, you just don't see that sort of unfettered relationship right. between athletes and consumers, you know, consumers of their product in that way. Mm-hmm. And obviously he has hurt himself to a certain extent in the sort of general view of, like, A, joining the Warriors and being perceived as a snake, and then B, allowing himself to get emotional over, you know, meaningless Twitter beefs, and then, you know, creating a burner and whatever different things that I'm sure a lot of people do, but, like, just getting caught at it. Mm-hmm. And then C, like, you know, joining to, or leaving to, you know, to join Kyrie, which a lot of people see as, like, a kind of a demonstrably similar personality and persona in this you know, sort of public space, which is the NBA on an international level at this point, which, like, Kyrie is posting things on Instagram, which you read them and you're like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what is, like, what? Oh, whoa. You know, the whole thing that popped up with him not being in, you know, in Boston, and et cetera, et cetera. And I guess I'm just surprised that I'm surprised that they decided to team up together, because they, it seems like it's a heartache in waiting. But I'm also very curious to see what the Nets look like next year, you know, halfway through the right. season, like, as they start putting it together. I mean, that's going to be a great team. And I very much look forward to that, both from a basketball standpoint and both from a, like, how the hell is this going to work?
Right.
It's going to get messy.
I mean, it's going to get messy, but I think also, like, the thing about that with him on the Warriors is that it, you know, Steph was that unifying figure, at least at the beginning, where it, like, kind of made it all made sense. And then, you know, him and Draymond were bumping heads and doing whatever. But again, like, it's crazy now that we're, you know, the headlines are all like, oh, Eric Pascal is a savior. And it's like, yo, we had Draymond, Clay, Steph, and KD on the same team like a year ago.
Yeah. Now we're looking for the shiniest penny.
Well, I mean, they're still on the team, you know.
Yeah.
They're all gone.
No, but I mean, you know, people are hurt.
Pretty much all gone.
I mean, everybody's hurt. I mean, again, that's my, I guess my point is that things change so quick. And I think that we've seen that evidenced in the NBA, not just with the Warriors, but throughout, especially this year, which is what makes it so exciting. And, you know, as evidenced also by, like, the rise of people like Luka Doncic and some of these new players that are coming onto the scene, who are just putting up numbers that we just wouldn't have thought were possible. And I think that at the end of the year, we're going to look back and really count this as one of the more interesting, you know, start to finish NBA seasons that we've ever had,
right,
just by nature of the fact that, like, we have no clue what's going to happen, because you don't have that just obviously dominant team like the Warriors, or you don't have, you know, KD's out. And
I mean, it's, you know, the LA teams, right? Like, the Lakers and Clippers are pretty clear tier above everybody else, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, I think the Clippers are a clear tier above the Lakers. Like, I think the Clippers are horrifying.
Yeah. I agree, but I think at the same time too, like, they have no experience together in the playoffs, you know. And I think that like, even when KD joined the Warriors, it was still that thing of, like, the Warriors were battle tested and they knew who they were. And they knew how to succeed in Kerr's system because they'd already been through it. And both those LA teams are first year teams, you know?
Yeah, so, like, they're both took great. Us to seven last year.
Yeah, no, I mean, that team, well, yeah. All right. So, point taken.
I mean,
yeah,
they lost that Shai Gilchrist guy, but they got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard instead. Like,
that's a good point. Yeah.
That's a squad.
No, that Kawhi is Leonard a squad.
That he can make a 1-year turnaround. I mean, Kawhi went to the Raptors and game of championship, like boom, bada bing, it's it. You know, so I wherever Kawhi goes, it's pretty scary.
Yeah. Well, and are we going to talk about the ratings at all?
Sure.
Well, because one of the articles that you wrote today, Daniel, was about the Warriors getting bumped from the national TV schedule. And I sent you something on Slack that was like this sort of broader, like, look at all of the NBA ratings. Like, everything is down across the boards. And it's not just this year. It's part of a broader trend that may have been amplified a bit this year. But, you know, the league in general has a developing viewership problem that I think is sort of been exacerbated by this, like, super, you know, I don't like the term super team era, but, you know, when LeBron went to the Heat, it sort of put the league on notice that, look, if you want to be serious about winning a ring, you need to sort of line up your soldiers on under one banner. You need to pick a team and, like, try and bring top-tier help in, and that's how you win a championship. And that's sort of the new model. But the problem is that it sort of disassembles a lot of what makes the league intriguing. You know, we were talking earlier about how when the Warriors were really crappy back then, there was some investment. You know, it's, well, maybe Monte can figure out how to dribble with his head up. You know, like, maybe Mike Dunleavy isn't that bad. I don't know. Maybe he can figure it out. Maybe Anthony Randolph is going to turn into something.
I'm still waiting for that, by the way.
I know I was wrong on so much, but there's a sort of buy-in there. But now everyone floats around in free agency so much. There's these huge roster upheavals pretty much every offseason where the whole balance of the league shifts. And I don't know that it's a bad thing, but I think that it makes people are sort of divesting their interest in the regular season because of all these factors, you know. And then you can go on Twitter, 10 minutes on Twitter, and you can see all the highlights from all the games that you really care about.
I think that's the driving factor. I think because if you look at ratings across the board for most television shows, the NFL as well, baseball, across the board, it's been a ratings dip for some time now. And I think it's just because most folks aren't going to watch cable. They're going to cut the cord and stream it somewhere else. And in today's, you know, time where there's so much to watch, and, you know, we live in the not only the entertainment era, but the social media era. Like, if I can watch on Twitter, like you said, in 10 minutes, the entire game, why would I spend 3 hours doing it unless, like, there's something really special happening? So I think, although I do think it's a part of it, the player movement there. I mean, considering the fact that I think in the article, the game seven for the 2016 finals had the highest ratings mark since the Jordan Bulls. Like, it was insane. That was a couple years ago. I think when people don't have a real reason to sit down and watch the basketball game, why would they? I mean, you can literally watch the entire game in 10 minutes on your phone after it goes off. Like, just as far as efficiency and, like, a life hack, why would you sit down in front of the TV? I mean, I think the times are changing. I mean, it almost reminds me of like when the iPod came out and people were like, oh my God, CD sales are falling. The music industry is, like, you know, in peril. And it was like, well, it's just transforming in a quick
As a veteran of the music industry, they weren't wrong. The music industry is totally gone now. But
not totally gone.
I mean, it's
heavy.
All right, it's top heavy. Cool. There's, like, a couple people making money, but, you know, record sales are gone. Spotify has replaced any sort of income generated to, like, those mid-tier talent or mid-tier, you know, touring bands or whatever. And the only way to actually make money is to tour. But, I mean, that's just a reality of that one industry. But I think that something that I've thought about a lot are, you know, people's attention spans and their habits of consumption of, you know, sports, alcohol, you know, relationships, food, like, everything has become so immediately accessible on your phone. And, you know, like, WW, you were talking about earlier where your alternate life is that you know, you do data, different things. And for me, one of the other things that I do, in addition to having toured for years as a musician, is that I also own a hard cider company, and we operate three different bars. And in the context of that, we've seen sort of that people want either an experience where they like want to come in and it's something special, where it's like they're making a point to make a trip out of it and it's like a special thing that they're doing, or like what I've seen with a lot of other bars specifically, and this is also true with music and all a bunch of different things, but that like people just don't want to leave their house, really, you know, because like if you want to order food, or if you want to get, you know, beer, or if you want to have a partner or whatever, like, you know, Tinder exists, or like, you know, Grubhub exists, and like everything can be ordered in, and Netflix is like, you know, you don't have to watch anything at the minute that it comes out. You know, you don't have to like be sitting in front of your TV for Game of Thrones at 9 p.m. on the dot, which is like maybe the last thing that will ever exist in that specific capacity, where it's like it's appointment viewing. And so to that extent, like people's capacity for the intaking of like things that are communally sort of like shared between a bunch of different people is becoming like much more dispersed, where it's like nobody really cares about the same things anymore. And so everybody is just sort of like going after like what their specific interest is, which is like, oh, I want to order Chinese food and like scroll through Tinder for a while and like find somebody to come over and like sleep with me, you know? And that's like, all right, that was a great Tuesday night. But it's not like, you know, and you're not like going out and doing, you know, you're not going to like a sort of communal meeting place, which traditionally would have been a bar, would have been, you know, somewhere, a sports bar, like go watch the Warriors game. You're all like watching it, and it's some like random mid-season game, you know? And now I think that like people don't think that they need to partake in the minutiae of like partaking in something that is actually boring, which is like, it's boring to watch this Warriors team lose to,
how dare you,
eat on a random Tuesday night. You know what I mean? Like, and if you don't have the incentive of like, oh, I'm going to get laid because of this, because I like went to some bar. So like, you're like staying
home. What kind of Warriors bars do you have out there?
Yeah. What kind of bar is this?
Sports bar. Google sports bar.
You go to sports bars to get laid?
Very low standards. That's the trick.
I'm just saying in general, like people like going out and like wanting to be a part of sort of like having to interact with strangers and like being forced to like get outside of their comfort zone. Like people aren't forced to get outside of their comfort zone now. And because of that, their attention span is like significantly decreased, because they don't have to then like go out and like try to chase after all these things that they're not used to chasing after, like be it
dealing with.
You know? Or dealing with anybody else, right? So they're just like in their own little world, and they're like, oh, well, I don't want to watch this game. And so they're streaming it anyways. And so they're like, oh, I'll just watch the Warriors going to lose anyways. They'll like watch the like, you know, 5-minute recap on YouTube. And then because of that, like everybody just ends up in their own little tiny universe. And then we all end up alone and dead at the end of the universe with nothing to show for it.
Can I just bright side that one a little bit? So the punk music scene, Bram, is still
that's the one thing, actually, and I have friends who are still in it too. Like, and that's the one thing where like people are making an active effort to like still give a shit about each other.
Yeah, but so the thing that I wanted to say though is what you're talking about is I've found, and maybe it's because like I'm an old fat white guy with kids, none of my friends want to like go out to shows, like much less on a weeknight. Like, it's just not even on the table. So I don't think that it's untrue, but there's the other side of that where now I'm just like, all right, cool. Well, I'm just going to go by myself, and I go to all these things by myself, and it's like, it's fine. It's cool. It's actually a little more natural now for me to go to shows solo versus with a group. And I think that that's the flip side of the sort of changing culture. You know, there's Tinder and all that. But there's also this, like, it's more acceptable. Like, you know, it's much more rare to hear, like, oh, I could never go to a movie by myself, or I would never eat a dinner by myself.
I love doing that stuff because it's fun. It's like, if I want to see a movie and if I'm traveling for work or for whatever, it's like, I would love to go see this movie. I mean, it doesn't – I think that there's a stigma that exists in being solo, but I think that that stigma is disappearing because I think a lot of people are doing things by themselves just by nature of like the sort of like, not the despair, but like the fact that like technology has, the promise of technology was to bring us all together and like all at Twitter and like all of the things that we were just talking about, like Twitter and technology and all these different things, like kind of promise to bring us all together. And the reality of them is that we're just consuming these things totally on our own and like thinking that we have a community, but in the reality, like sitting in our house, like staring at a lit screen on like a, you know,
see, it's just such a, like, that's such an old man complaint though, man. Like,
oh, are totally. You, I'm not, I feel like it's not.
I just feel like there are real connections, you know, like, I don't know what the GSOM site traffic is like, but
it's great. For those listening,
there's,
it's great.
It's, but there, you know, the people who are still around, it's like, this now feels like a community. You know what I mean? I mean, it's always felt like a community to me because I'm such a chatty person online, but there's a sort of like crucible process that's happening with the fan base right now. And I think that a lot of dorks sitting alone by themselves, watching it on their computer and like talking to weirdos, you know, who may be strangers on the computer, it develops a community. Like my boy Sleepy, the guy is like, he'll watch like a game cast, not even the actual play. He'll just be watching the like play by play develop and like chatting with fellow Warriors fans online. So I think maybe the ratings are dropping down and there's all sorts of societal impacts, but I don't think it's like killing the sort of social interaction side of things. I think it's just changing it. And like a lot of big companies and especially media companies, I just don't think that the old model is necessarily going to be able to get traction and gain profit out of people who are just sort of intrinsically resistant to that. Like, you know, people now, someone sends me something, oh, check out this video or whatever on YouTube, and it opens up to a non-skippable ad. Like, I just close it. Like, I'm just out.
I think the way that I am hearing from you guys is kind of this, there are so many different ways to look at a given subject, you know, so with the ratings thing here, you know, Bram's conclusion is we're going to die alone anyway. And WDub's conclusion is, hey, actually, it's a great way to meet strangers you would probably never, ever talk to and ever. I mean, you know, going through the Mind Night that we have every year. And when it comes out, get your tickets, by the way.
March 31st, 2020. March
31st, the Nuggets. I'm always surprised by the people there who are like, dude, I read your work. I love what you do. I mean, I never comment, but I'm constantly reading your stuff. I'm like, whoa, thanks. Like, here are the strangers from afar appreciating all the hard work we put into the site, you know, on a daily basis. And, you know, those kind of moments there wouldn't have happened probably if we didn't have the technology. So I think it can kind of be, you know, either utopia in some ways and Black Mirror in other ways, but that's kind of the beauty of it, that there are multiple facets to it. But we're getting a little late on the pod here. And, you know, I'm not alone tonight, so I have to, you know, make moves. But I want to close with this question to you both. What do you think the moral of the story for the season will be? Because as Pat Riley said, you can't win the championship every year. It's hard, and you're not going to win 20 in a row. Each year has its own pitfalls, and we're very fortunate to have had the last 5 years, where even the last 5 years, we didn't win every year, you know, 3 out of 5 in bat. What do you think the moral for the season is going to be? Looking back on it,
everything's impermanent. The suffering and the joys, it's all impermanent. Everything's going to change all the time. And you're just, or at least I am, extracting value out of the experience versus tying it too much to a result.
Wow. I felt a tear well up in my eye. Whoa.
All I'm saying is that, you know, like we were talking about rooting for the crappy teams earlier, like, I'm getting something out of rooting for these guys. I know they're really bad and I know they're getting spanked, but it's valuable to me as a fan to like put the time in to watch these guys go through this struggle. And I think that for a lot of times, recently, the team was so good, they were hard to watch in the opposite direction. You know, it's like it was. It's already decided already. Like, I don't even care if they're behind. Like, we're gonna win this game. And I think that that sort of complacency and reliance on the result of the process versus the actual like joy of watching your team like fight through a season is something that I think a lot of Warriors fans are going to come away from the season remembering this one as. But, you know, the other thing is this is cleaning out the bandwagon for sure.
It's long overdue.
Bram, your thoughts, sir?
I think I agree very much with Drew, or Dubs, sorry.
That's okay. You can leave it in. If anybody's listening an hour in, they can know my real name.
Yeah. my real name is actually Bram. But yeah, no, I think that there's something that, I don't know. It's a strange season. You know, the Warriors, when they were bad before, there was this plucky underdog element to them and they had never won anything. And they were in Oakland and it was still like selling out all the time. And then, you know, I've been to the new Chase Arena and it's beautiful and it's great. And it's just very different, you know? And so I think my concern is like, how does the fandom react to sudden being bad at basketball? and you know, and but with an underlying understanding that Steve Kerr and Bob Myers are two of the people that I respect the most probably in the world, just from an outsider's view and having met them both briefly at Summer League, but people that I really trust to get it done in a long-term capacity. And, you know, if they both sign on to stay with the team moving forward, I'm sure that it's nothing but up from here, and that this season we'll probably look back at and just think like, man, that was very strange. But I think that watching the team from afar, you know, from New York, obviously, and not being able to like be in the arena, I'm mostly just like curious, like what the energy is going to feel like, you know, on a random Tuesday night game and, you know, in January or something. So
you can check out a Tuesday night game in March when you come to Golden State of Mind Night.
Yeah, I got to get my tickets, man. You know, this year. GSO, I'm going to get my plane tickets.
Super cheap. Fly me out. Yeah, it's spring break, man. Come on out.
Spring break, yeah, because I'm obviously still in college.
you know, on that show, Bram, I've been to probably too many games at Chase Center so far. And you know how it is with the bonds of fans. Even when the team's down 20, there's still that, hey, we're in this together kind of vibe there. And I think, you know, Dub Nation tends to be pretty smart on the basketball stuff and they know what's going on. You know what I mean? And they know that we have some real killers waiting in the wings. And when they come back, everything's going to be much, much, much better. And to W Dubs, Drew's Dubs points about the losing compared to the winning, I feel like maybe I was in the minority. You know, because I'm maybe like a cartoon character, but I really enjoyed in the same way that, you know, most folks may enjoy The Irishman knowing that someone's about to get whacked. I really love watching the Warriors just murder teams. And even when they were like not trying for three quarters to come on, it's like, we're going to destroy you. I just enjoy that because, number one, it's so rare. Like what we witnessed was so rare. And I think back to the, you know, the Jordan Bulls, you know, who, you know, we're dominant, but I remember a lot of those games coming down to like, hey man, like if Michael doesn't hit this shot, the Bulls lose. And to see the Warriors, the way they were so dominant for so long, it just really made me appreciate just basketball history. Cause like maybe a while
totally. Before that
again, you yeah, know, totally. For that to happen in our own backyard, I thought it was super special. And I guess I don't want to sound ungrateful and kind of say, for me personally, for me to say, oh, I liked the team more when they weren't as good, it seems like a slap in the face of those guys for really elevating to the top of the heap. And we've seen so many would-be super teams. I mean, think about, you know, the Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant, Steve Nash. Who was the other person? I can't remember who that person was. Dwight Howard, Paul Gasol. Like, remember those teams? Like, they were trash. And it was like, wow, they couldn't put their egos aside, like, just to play good basketball. And the Warriors did that. And they were excellent. And the things they did were just unprecedented. I mean, Andre Iguodala coming off the bench and doing what he did for that team. I mean, even though it may have looked easy, for me, I always appreciated, you know, the level of genius it takes to be that great night in and night out. I mean, Brian O said something about, you know, scouting for the Warriors, and he was like, I know those guys are taking everyone's best shot every night. When they go on the road, that is the champion. That is the Super Bowl for whatever team. You know, when they go to New Orleans, they go to, you know, Orlando, all the fans in that arena are like, this is the night, and we got to beat those guys. And for the Warriors to still win, like, I just don't feel like that can be celebrated enough personally. And I'm just super grateful for Joe Lightyear's for doing what he had to do to, you know, write those checks, I guess. But also for the players and the coaching staff to be that excellent, that consistently for that long, despite all the trials and tribulations. I mean, hopefully it happens again, but if it doesn't, I will always cherish that for the rest of my life.
What?
Yeah.
I think that's a very eloquent point, and I think it's something that we all are in agreement on, no matter like where we stand on anything else, is that, like, I mean, we were just very, I know I am very, very, very grateful to have been a part of this run. And, you know, that type of thing does not happen. And it's maybe happened three other times before, you know, like with the Celtics of the Bill Russell era, and then, like, you know, the Lakers and the Celtics of the Magic and Bird, and then, like, and then the Jordan Bulls in some capacity, and then like this last rendition of the Warriors. And that's something that, you know, you can never change and is beautiful to look at, and is something that was a gift to all of the lifelong Warriors fans and all of the people who have, you know, stuck it out and who continue to stick it out. And again, I, you know, I think what you're saying too is, like, no matter what happens, I mean, we're all gonna watch, and we're all gonna see what happens, and you know, I can't wait to see what that is. It's just it's a funny moment, you know, obviously in a funny transitional period.
Oh, we suck. We're trash right now.
You know, and that's something else too, is like how people are gonna look back on this year. It's really gonna matter how we come out of this transition phase.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for all the talk about light years, like, this upcoming offseason is the first real challenge where it's like, if you make the wrong move, you could end the dynasty run pretty easily.
That's scary.
Right? I mean, you trade the wrong guy, or invest in the wrong person, or let the wrong guy walk. You know, it's very wide open moving on from this year.
And that's why we got to keep Marquise Chris.
Hey.
No, anyways.
I'm ready to see Willie Cauley-Stein move on to greener pastures.
Wow.
I wouldn't mind. He's so young. Chris is so young, and he looks like he's improving a little bit.
We're going to need a lot of improvement there, but I thank you, my GSON brethren, for being there with me in the trenches while this team goes through this difficult experience. But hey, we've been here before, and we shall rise again. And I hope that I hope to see you at the GSON night, March 31st against the Denver Nuggets at Chase Center in San Francisco, because I'll be there, and I know W-Dub Drew Dubs will be there.
Represent. Graham,
you gotta come through, man. We need you.
Cool. It's cool. Gonna, I keep asking you about the executive liquor cabinet too, Bram. I don't know. Yeah. Move on both of those.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Listening to this hour-long therapy session, and we hope it was therapeutic for you as well. Signing off for Bram and Dubs. It's your boy Daniel. Have a good night.